Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferentz.
Schools in Los Angeles shut down today due to a strike by 30,000 support staffers, raising the retirement age, causing a major protest in France. And today on the show, we check in with the Ohio Federation of Teachers and the latest from the News Guild, CWA. Welcome to the Tuesday, March 21st edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on at least six platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and Stitcher. Two guests on the show today. We're going to start things off with Melissa Cropper on behalf of the Ohio Federation of Teachers, where she serves as president, oh.aft.org. And right off the bat, we're going to get into a couple of House bills. Two House bills, says Melissa, that would sabotage our state budget. One of them is HB1, which is a regressive tax scheme which would lead to big tax cuts for the rich and create a $4 billion revenue shortfall over the next 2 years. Then there's HB 11, which according to the Ohio Federation would drain public schools of funding by offering private education vouchers to every Ohio student who attends private school or is homeschooled. And this piece of legislation has the potential to cost more than $1 billion per year. Then, the attack on union rights and academic freedom, that would be Senate Bill 83, which is a bill that would micromanage Ohio's public colleges and universities by doing a couple of things: banning mandates for diversity and equity in staff training and student curriculum, weakening tenure for faculty, and removing union rights, the ability to strike from faculty and staff. How about that one? Now, some good news here. The OFT has been organizing, and they're doing a really good job on this. Librarians and library workers at Worthington Libraries are in the process of voting, and that's happening today, voting to ratify their first contract. She'll bring us up to speed on that. In the meantime, teachers and staff at KIPP Columbus are still waiting for their union election in the face of a lot of union busting. Last week, the union filed two new unfair labor practice charges over retaliatory actions. Listen to this. One charge was because the superintendent told intervention specialists earlier in the year that they would receive extra pay for taking on a larger caseload. Well, now that person has reneged on the promise and falsely claimed it was because she was not allowed to do so because of the union. There's a person that doesn't know what she's doing, no doubt. So lots to talk about with Melissa Cropper. Once again, the website, oh.aft.org. John Schloss will be joining us later in the show. He serves as president of the News Guild, which is affiliated with the Communication Workers of America, website newsguild.org. And I'll tell you, one of the things we're going to talk about right off the bat is an ugly situation in Pittsburgh. There is a strike, 6-month-long strike, which became violent over the weekend with a contracted driver physically assaulting a picketer. And they've got video of this. Video released by the newspaper shows the driver punching the striker, who approached him yelling taunts. The striking worker had to be hospitalized, and it turns out that the Post-Gazette hired a security firm trained in labor conflict to monitor the picket lines. The strikers walked out in response to a new contract which increased healthcare premiums for workers And they are now calling on the Department of Labor and the state of Pennsylvania to investigate the event. They want criminal charges, and I can't blame them for that. Ugly situation over there going on way, way, way too long. The other issue we're going to get into is the consolidation in the media. And right now, the Federal Communications Commission is taking a look at the attempted takeover of a local news broadcaster by the name of Tegna. And here's the deal. There is a hedge fund called Standard General that announced their plans to acquire Tegna. This was about a year ago. It's an $8.6 billion deal, and it affects more than 60 local news stations across the country. And the union, a number of unions, are rallying on this one, and for very good cause. Because when you have these hedge funds that take over outlets, bad things happen. I'm going to give you an example here of what has happened in the newspaper industry. There's a giant hedge fund called Alden Capital, and they've been gobbling up newspapers for a long time. And here's one example. They tried to buy Gannett. Gannett owns USA Today, and it was a failed bid. This happened back in 2019. Well, turns out that Gannett lined up with another media chain, Gatehouse. So they merged so they can become a stronger company. But you know what happened? They shed a whole lot of employees. At the end of 2018, this is a pre-merger, the two companies had a total of 27,600 employees. You know where they are now? 11,200. Yeah, that's what's happening in America, because these hedge funds, they strip them down to bare bones. And a lot of news outlets can't do what they're supposed to do, you know, dig into various stories in their respective communities. It's just not happening, especially in the smaller markets. So we're going to talk about that and what we need to do to turn that around with John Schloss, president of the News Guild. So we have two presidents. We have Melissa Cropper, president of the Ohio Federation of Teachers, and John Schloss, president of the News Guild CWA. Now, a brief look into the world of labor. This segment brought to you by the good folks at Boyd Watterson Asset Management. You can find more at boydwatterson.com. Big strike going on in Los Angeles today. At least 30,000 support staffers toiling for the Los Angeles Unified School District, staging a 3-day strike, protesting low pay, lack of respect, and their boss's labor law breaking refusal to bargain. With support from the United Teachers of Los Angeles, which is an affiliate of the American Federation of Teachers, the cafeteria workers, bus drivers, custodians, special ed assistants, all members of Service Employees Local 99 have combined to shut one of the largest school systems down in an effort to get district officials to move on a new contract. Got a comment here from Max Arias, who's executive director of Local 99. These are workers who've been treated as a second-class workforce by the district for far too long. Prior to their plan for strike, about 45,000 workers and their supporters marched through downtown L.A. This was last week in a show of solidarity. They're also drawing citywide support from other unions. The workers say the district is flush with cash and can't afford their demands. They want a 30% pay raise over a 4-year contract and a $2 an hour bonus for hazardous work, since the pandemic is still affecting that area. We're talking Los Angeles. The workers, most of them women, are demanding equitable wage increases, more full-time work, respectful treatment, and increased staffing levels for improved student services. The district has a $14 billion annual budget and almost $5 billion in reserve. Local 99 says its wage demand would add about 7% to the budget and bring them, the workers, above the poverty line. A lot of these workers, and again, mostly women, making about $25,000 a year. Okay? Now, $25,000 a year in some communities you can get by, but not in Los Angeles. Not going to happen. That'll last you a couple of months. The district is offering 5% raises in the PAC's first 3 years, plus a 4% bonus in the third year and a final 5% bonus, but no raises in the 2023-24 school year. Last December, the school district forced Local 99 to declare an impasse in bargaining. Those sessions, by the way, began almost a year ago. A mediator was brought in to try to bring the two sides together. That didn't go anywhere. So that led to a strike authorization vote in February, which passed by 96%. Throughout the bargaining, including the run-up to the strike authorization vote, the district subjected workers to harassment, spying, and intimidation. And that forced Local 99, again, this is the service employees, to file dozens of labor law-breaking, formerly unfair labor practice charges with the State Public Employees Relations Board. Arias says, again, he's the executive director, Max Arias says, workers have been interrogated about what they discussed in union meetings, even threatened with termination if they took part in a strike. Some have been demoted and forced to take a pay cut for their union activity. Can you blame them for what they're doing? Now, this is a three-day strike. They wanted to get the attention, and this is getting a whole lot of media attention, no doubt about that. Let's go to France now. Protesters in France took to the streets last week and over the weekend after the president, Macron, used what they call a nuclear option to raise the retirement age. The president ordered his prime minister to invoke Article 49.3 of the Constitution to increase the retirement age from 62 to 64 without a vote of the National Assembly. The article, called Ley 49.3, allows the prime minister to bypass the National Assembly, but not the Senate, and gives the Assembly 24 hours to file a no-confidence vote against the government. If a majority adopts the resolution of no confidence, the bill's rejected, then the prime minister steps down. Well, as of December 2022, this article has been invoked 99 times since the adoption of the French Constitution. We're going back to 1958, including 10 times by Elizabeth Borne, the prime minister, since May of 2022. The pension bill has been in the works for months, causing labor opposition expressed by uncollected trash, tens of thousands marching on Women's Day. It has been predicted that Article 49.3 would most probably be invoked to increase the retirement age, but the president ordered the move only minutes before the scheduled vote. Well, thousands have gathered to protest the reform bill. A mostly peaceful afternoon was followed by a night with protesters lighting fires and throwing cobblestones at police, who then responded with tear gas and water cannons to disperse the crowd. That's what's going on in France, because they want to raise the retirement age from 62 to 64 without a vote. Can't do that. They got strong labor laws there, no doubt about that. All right, quick break. Coming up next, Melissa Cropper on behalf of the Ohio Federation of Teachers.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
The United Steelworkers of America represent over 70,000 workers in the state of Ohio. Steelworker members enjoy the benefits of some of the best contracts of any workers in the world. Many of your friends, neighbors, and relatives are members of one of the most effective democratic unions in our country. With the pressures unorganized workers are under in today's economy, you need to join them. So call the Steelworkers Organizing Office at 216-292-5683 or toll free at 1-800-443-3752.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at BoydWatterson.com.
Buildings, bridges, skyscrapers, and more. Structures that are the face of our cities and towns were built by members of the Ironworkers Union. That's why it's important that our workforce of over 130,000 ironworkers continues to be the safest and best trained in the field. With 154 training centers, we invest over $90 million annually in safety and training. We're growing the next generation of union ironworkers. There are so many reasons to put your trust in our ironworkers and their employers. Learn more about us at ironworkers.org.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferentz with America's Workforce.
And don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook or follow us on Twitter. That would be AWF Union Podcast. Before we get to Melissa Cropper, footnote to the story that I was talking about a few minutes ago at the opening of the show about the support staffers going on strike in Los Angeles today at the Los Angeles Unified School District. We're talking about 30,000 support staffers, many of them making about $25,000 a year. And the talks have been going on for a long time and not getting anywhere. And the district is really, really aggressive on the workers in the union. In some of the cases, listen to this, food service workers were locked in a cafeteria to prevent them from voting to go on strike. Now, the vote to go on strike was 96%, overwhelming. One special education assistant who was 6 months pregnant was threatened with arrest, and the school district called the police in when she updated her colleagues on the negotiations. That's how nasty it is over in Los Angeles. So we certainly support the staffers there. They're all members of the Service Employees International Union. All right, let's go to Columbus, Ohio right now and join Melissa Cropper on behalf of the Ohio Federation of Teachers, oh.aft.org. Melissa, I'm sure over the years you've seen a lot when it comes to labor unrest in the news, but that is so ridiculous. And I can't believe for the life of me that that those workers are making, and a lot of them are part-time, $25,000 a year. Melissa, how far can you go with $25,000 a year in Los Angeles, you know?
Oh, not far at all. We can't go that far on $25,000 in Ohio, let alone Los Angeles. So these workers obviously deserve to be making more than that, and to be treated like that, unfortunately, is not surprising, but it's pretty disgusting.
I know the teachers had a strike a couple of years ago, and I think they're next because I believe that contract is coming to an end. So we'll keep our eye on that one. But let's focus on the state of Ohio, and we've got some budget issues here. Two House bills that would pretty much sabotage our budget here. Why don't you explain what's going on here? What is it, HB1? Let's start off with that one.
Well, actually, so there's a... to give a little bit of backdrop context, also in the budget bill this year is our fair school funding formula. And it looks pretty positive that we might be able to get the next phase of funding for that passed through the budget. Now, we're actually asking for a full phase in. Just to remind people, the fair school funding formula came up in the budget last budget cycle, and there's supposed to be a six-year phase-in. They phased in the first 2 years, but didn't guarantee anything beyond that. So we're due for the next 2 years, but revenues in Ohio are actually much higher than had been anticipated, and there's money there to fully fund it, so we're calling for full funding of that. But regardless of whether they just do a phase-in or do the full funding, there's these other two bills that greatly jeopardize that. One of those is House Bill 1. And House Bill 1 would reform our tax system and institute a flat tax, which is a very regressive tax. And that would actually cut revenues in the state by, I believe, almost $4 billion. And so obviously, doesn't matter how good your funding formula is, if you don't have revenue to put into the formula, then it's going to hurt schools. Not only is it going to hurt schools, because it's going to hurt any public institution that relies on taxes. So our schools, our public libraries, our prison systems, anything that, you know, our mental health institutes, anything that relies on some type of public funding is going to be hurt. But it's also going to hurt the taxpayers. It's one of those things that sounds good on the surface, but basically what it's doing is shifting responsibility from the state back to local taxpayers, which, you know, smacks again of what we declared unconstitutional in our school funding formula decades ago.
So we're apparently making one step forward with the fair funding, but then two steps backwards with the funding of the overall budget. Then that is that
correct?
A pretty
it's like
good
a big shell game. Yeah. It's like a big shell game. It's like, okay, yes, you can have this. However, you've got a formula, but you got no money to put into it. Basically, is what it turns out to, right?
How far are we with this legislation right now?
Well, the education funding is being debated in the House right now, and again, that actually looks like it's going fairly smoothly. House Bill 1 is also being debated in the House right now. It's hard to say where it stands right now. We obviously need people to speak up, speak out, and say that this is not the way that we want to do taxes in Ohio. We suspect that it may not pass exactly as it looks right now, but there will be some kind of push to do tax reform. And it's really scary, because when people hear tax cuts, they automatically assume that that's a good thing. But you always have to look at what's underneath those tax cuts and who is actually getting the cuts and who is actually going to see very little decrease and maybe even some increase. And almost always it's the more money you make, the better tax cut you get. The less money you make, the more it impacts you and maybe even hurts you.
Yeah. Oh, this argument's been going on for decades now. This is so-called trickle-down theory. So if you do tax cuts, especially the rich will benefit, and then the rich will create more jobs, and that's going to benefit the American population, which really hasn't happened over the years. But that's another show.
Right.
What about HB 11 here? HB 11 now, apparently this deals with vouchers?
Yes, HB 11 would be a universal voucher. So we've been talking about vouchers on this show for a long time, and the state legislature's attempts to expand vouchers. This would be the most expansive reach of vouchers that we've ever seen. It'd be a universal voucher that allows everybody to take a voucher if they want to take a voucher. So, you know, it's not just income-based, it's not just school-quality-based. Anybody could take a voucher. And the speculation is it would cost over $1 billion just to fund the students who are already going to private school and already paying for private school. They would now be eligible for these vouchers, too. So, again, this drains money from our public school system, drains money that could go into that fair school funding formula, and sends it to private schools.
And wasn't the idea with vouchers, when that idea came out years back, well, if the school was not performing properly, the parent had an opportunity to use the voucher and send that child to another school that might be more suited to that individual? Wasn't that the original intention
correct.
For the voucher?
They've used two basic arguments around vouchers. The one you just said, which is allow parents to choose to leave a school they think doesn't fit their child. And hand in hand with that is actually also saying to allow socially economically disadvantaged students who don't have the money to pay to make that choice, give them the money to be able to make that choice. And now, like you've indicated, it's not just going to poor children. It's not just going to children who are in schools that aren't performing at a level that other schools are performing at. Every student, regardless of your income, regardless of the quality of your school, is basically just, this is what's called the backpack bill. It's basically saying we're going to put $6,700 in your backpack and you go use it wherever you want to use it.
Yeah. Melissa, I see there is a call to action on this. If you go to the Ohio Federation of Teachers website, oh.aft.org, You can see a link to the Action Network to mobilize everybody to turn this around. Again, we're talking about HB 11, House Bill 11, which would drain public schools of funding by offering private education vouchers to every student. To every student who wants to go to a private school. And that has the potential to cost more than $1 billion a year. Is that right, Melissa?
That's correct. And just to put that into context, to fully fund our fair school funding formula would be approximately $2 billion. So we're talking $1 billion just to go to private schools when we're not even fully funding our public schools.
All right. Let's move on to Senate Bill 83. Now, this involves a higher education and also academic freedom. Explain what's going on in this arena.
Yes, people might remember that last General Assembly, we were fighting language around divisive concepts in our K-12 schools and what we can teach, cannot teach, prohibiting diversity, equity, and inclusion training. This is a very, very similar type bill, except at the higher ed level. So it's really restricting what professors are able to teach in their classrooms. And the one of the really scary parts in it, it is prohibiting universities, public universities, from going on strike. And that extends also to, by the way, to nurses also. So that, again, this is an overreach on our rights as union people to use our leverage to be able to get good contracts. But even beyond that, it's a real deep reach into our education system and really limiting what our professors are able to teach in their classrooms and what our universities are able to do around diversity, equity, and inclusion.
And how far are we on this bill? Again, Senate Bill 83, where are we right now with it?
This was just introduced last week, so it's in the very, very beginning stages. There is a hearing on it tomorrow morning, and we're asking anyone who lives close to, within driving distance of the state house to please show up at that hearing. It is sponsored testimony, but it's very important that we have people show up and show that we are opposed to this, that this is not how we want to operate our higher ed system in Ohio, and it's not how we want to treat union members in Ohio either.
Yeah, this is very similar to what's going on in the state of Florida right now. All right, let's move on to organizing and first contracts here. And I know you and I were talking a lot in past months about Worthington Libraries. What's the latest on that? Did they finally get their first contract or what?
They just got their contract late last week, actually. They ratified yesterday. Both the members and the administration have now ratified that agreement. So it's official that we have a first contract at Worthington Public Libraries, and it's one that's very, very favorable to our members there. Parental leave, increase in pay, all the kind of things that they were asking for and that all library workers deserve, we see in this contract.
Very good. I know that was a tough battle there, but it's finally over. Good stuff. Yeah, we were talking about first contracts yesterday with the New York Central Labor Council and how difficult they are to achieve. So that is quite an accomplishment. Very good. Very good. Now, what's the latest going on with Kip Columbus? Can you explain that one?
So Kip Charter School in Columbus, we're still waiting for a hearing for a decision from the NLRB. So again, the administration there has challenged jurisdiction, whether it should be under NLRB or under CERB, even though this has already been decided twice in Ohio that charter schools fall under NLRB. This is one of the delay tactics that the administration has been using. So we're still waiting to get a decision from the NLRB. In the meantime, our organizing committee remains very strong. We still have over 70% of workers there who are willing to put their name out publicly and say that they want a union. They're already working on their proposals that they want to see in their first contract, and we just keep moving ahead. Hopefully we get a decision within the next couple of weeks and we can go into an election.
Melissa, I was talking about this earlier about the superintendent at Kip Columbus that was, I guess, going over the line, doing some things they shouldn't have been doing. And can you explain? I'd like to hear this in your words. What happened there?
I mean, we're actually following a couple of ULPs there. One of them is that they are actually cutting some positions there, and they happen to be people who are on our organizing committee, at the same time that they are advertising for more administrative-type positions. So we're watching out for things like that that are happening there and the ways that they're suddenly trying to intimidate our organizing committee and our membership there, and we're actively filing ULPs whenever something like that happens.
Yeah, that's pretty much the case in so many labor struggles. All right, we'll leave it on that note. Melissa Cropper, president of the Ohio Federation of Teachers, do go to that website and check out that link to the Action Network on those pieces of legislation, HB1, HB11. Also, Senate Bill 83 is another one, oh.aft.org. Always a pleasure. Thank you so much for the sponsorship, and we'll talk to you next month, okay?
Thank you. Bye-bye.
John Schloss, president of the News Guild, CWA. He's coming up next.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.
America's Workforce Radio is sponsored in part by the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades, District Council 6, representing painters, glazers, drywall finishers, and sign and display industry workers. They remind you that belonging to a union is your right as an American.
We're the nurses, firefighters, and claims representatives that help keep our government services running. We respond to natural disasters. We care for our nation's veterans, and we investigate discrimination in the workplace. We are federal and D.C. government workers, and we are proud to serve the American people. Working in more than 70 agencies across the government, we know we can fulfill our mission because our union has our back. Learn more at AFGE.org. Paid for by the American Federation of Government Employees, AFL-CIO.
Union members need to be heard. Reliable and convenient union voting has never been more important than it is now. Make voting easy for your membership by working with survey and ballot systems. SBS offers encrypted and monitored solutions that ensure your elections are accurate and accessible for every member through mail-in, online, and in-person voting. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com and take the next step in getting secure and auditable elections.
America's Workforce appreciates our sponsor, the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council, who represents more than 18,000 workers from 19 affiliated local unions and district councils.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And remember, you can check us out on at least 6 platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and Stitcher. When you get an opportunity, just sign up and receive our shows on a regular basis and give us a rating. We always appreciate those 5-star ratings, so please keep them coming. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the North Coast Labor Federation. Let's go to Washington right now. Welcome John Schloss back to the show. John is president of the News Guild, which is affiliated with the Communication Workers of America, one of our proud sponsors here on the show, newsguild.org. And John, I see congratulations are in order. You were reelected to another term at the News Guild by acclamation, and acclamation means nobody challenged you. So you are one heck of a leader, John Schloss. They're afraid to take on Mr. Schloss. Is that the case here or what?
I hope not. I thank you so much for that. I think it's really important for every labor leader to advocate for competitive elections. I was actually pushing repeatedly to get a challenger in this election, and no one wanted to come after me. So we'll see. But you know, it's good to have competitive elections, but it's good to be here for a bit longer to continue trying to make our union better.
Well, I'll tell you, you are making your union better. Where are you on membership right now? Because every time I have you on, you're organizing more outlets. Where do we stand right now with the News Guild?
So as a sector inside CWA, we're about 26 1,000 members in the U.S. and Canada. That includes our members up in CWA Canada. And last year alone, more than 2,000 members joined the News Guild from 35 different workplaces.
That's awesome. A lot of digital media right now. That's pretty much the case.
Yeah, you know, we it's kind of a mixture, but in recent years we've had the folks from Insider and Politico. Those are two really large digital. I mean, I guess Politico has printed a newspaper in the past. And maybe you can still get it on the Hill. I haven't seen it up there, but yeah, that and then some business operations at the Atlantic magazine, and then just kind of a mixture of smaller publications. We also represent nonprofit staffers as well.
Yeah, a lot of organizing in the nonprofits right now. All right, let's talk about what's happening, and this is horrific. Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, workers have been on strike for almost 6 months, and apparently things got really, really ugly on the picket line. Can you tell us what happened here? And this was just over the weekend then that this happened?
Yeah, well, it was last weekend on the 18th, and basically every Wednesday and Saturday night, the Post-Gazette prints a scab publication. They have a relationship with another publisher that is aggressively anti-union. They print this paper because all the Teamsters, the press workers, the drivers have been on strike. And they deliver it to these different distribution centers. But then carriers come, independent contractors come, and they pick up their bundles and then they take them across the city. Well, a couple of Saturdays ago, the driver who comes in on this big, like, Penske rented truck, he's a strike breaker. He comes in and he starts yelling at the picketers. The picketers are yelling back at him, and he hauls off and punches and takes on a guy and then another guy, and actually breaks one of the strikers, one of the picketers' jaws, the guy who is going into surgery soon.
What about charges? I understand they got video on this. Or are they following up with charges possibly?
Yeah, there's video on so many different angles here. The striker who was punched, the Teamster driver, he is looking at filing charges. He's also just trying to figure out his current health situation. This whole strike began, and his health insurance was canceled by the Post-Gazette. That's why the strike began. So it's really disgustingly ironic that the Post-Gazette rips away health insurance and then also hires strike breakers who then go off and break a striker's jaw.
Yeah, let's talk about that, because the newspaper is refusing to pay, I'm reading, $19 per week per employee for an increase in health care. And
yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, we're talking about, like, basically what would be tens of thousands of dollars in increased premiums for a few dozen workers, and that's what this strike began on. You were talking about the lowest stakes of any negotiation that I have an eyeball on in the News Guild right now, and this is affordable health insurance, and for the company to follow labor law, it's pretty wild that the company just is absolutely refusing to follow the law.
Now, they're still publishing, and I take it there's a few workers working there, and are they so they're crossing the picket line or what?
Yeah, it's really unfortunate. We've got a number of scabs, particularly, unfortunately, on my side. I have to just be responsible to it. We have a lot of journalists who have crossed the picket line. I have made all kinds of arguments to them. You know, you're destroying your journalism career when you cross a picket line, especially when you're doing it in favor of an employer that is openly violating a judge's order for the company to bargain in good faith. So you're bargaining labor law and refusing people health insurance. I don't understand why these scabs are the way they are. But, you know, for folks like us and your listeners, it's hard to get in the head of a scab.
So where are we right now with negotiation? And so no negotiations are going on right now. I was reading earlier about the Department of Labor. I guess you're perhaps looking at some help out of Washington on this, or the state of Pennsylvania.
We're looking for all the help that we can get. Basically, the company will come to the bargaining table, but they will agree to absolutely nothing. Essentially, they say, we're very happy with our proposal from 2017. those are the proposals that they ultimately illegally imposed on the guild, on the newsroom folks. And those are the proposals that they've been giving to the other groups. There's five total bargaining units here at bargaining, but we go to every single bargaining all together. Each group goes with each other. And the company just refuses to negotiate. So we brought in a mediator. We've had calls directly to the Department of Labor to get even a better mediator. That might happen soon, and we might see a change in tenor. But, you know, the company just refuses to do it. They've hired a law firm out of Nashville, Tennessee. King & Ballew is the name. This group just exists to basically try to destroy union. And they're not bothered to spend millions and millions of dollars over years to fight unions. It's just really, it's a waste of energy and time and money, but this company does it.
And they have no regard for picketers. I was seeing a story that some picketers in the past have been targeted with bear spray, and this was at the facility where they print the newspaper. So, yeah, they are. They want to destroy the union. There's no question here. Very, very sad. I'm also kind of curious with the New York Times. I saw a story. I don't know if what you can say about it, but there's a deadlock between your union and the New York Times. Can you? I know there was like a one-day strike there recently.
Yeah, which was historic. Yeah, we had a one-day strike late last year at the New York Times. You know, we represent about 1,900 workers at the New York Times. There's the bargaining unit that's been in existence forever, which covers everyone from the security guards to, you know, a series of editors in the newsroom that are non-management, obviously. And we basically have been trying to convince the New York Times management that they need to be a little bit more respectful of their workers, thinking about inflation and pay wages and raises that would keep up with inflation. Now, this company has $500 million in cash on hand sitting at the New York Times. You know, last year they bought The Athletic. They also bought Wordle, you know, that popular game that you pick. So they've got a lot of money. They just need to share it with us. We have been gearing up for potentially a strike, an open-ended strike at the New York Times. We really just, at this point, need the company to respond to our proposals. They're just being a little bit skittish about it because when you show up in a room full of journalists, and there are hundreds of them on Zoom, companies tend to be a little bit awkward.
Yeah. You know, the funny part about this story, I just saw a story from the New York Times about the importance of unions. One of their writers was talking about all the organizing going on. They reflected on the right to work situation being repealed, soon to be repealed in the state of Michigan, and how important unions are in America. But then again, the management, well, a little different story there. Oh, my gosh. All right. John Schlois joining us on our live line. He is the president of the News Guild, CWANewsGuild.org. We'll continue the conversation right after this.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as healthcare and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining,
atomic energy, and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
The Heat and Frost Insulators and Allied Workers are proud to be a title sponsor for America's Workforce Radio. The Insulators Union is leading the way in the mechanical insulation industry, fire stopping, and infectious disease control. Regarded as North America's energy conservation specialist, these professionals are known for their professional work and dedication. You can learn more about the Insulators Union at insulators.org.
The AFL-CIO is a proud sponsor of America's Workforce Radio.
United by efforts to raise wages, listeners to this show and workers all across America are beginning to turn a corner and drive the economic debate. The AFL-CIO is comprised of 12.5 million working people, but we stand with and fight for everyone who is working for a better life. For more information about our raising wages agenda, go to aflcio.org.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And remember, you can check us out on Facebook or follow us on Twitter. That would be AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the United Labor Agency. You can find more at ulagency.org. Let's go back to Washington and rejoin John Schlois, president of the News Guild, CWANewsGuild.org. All right, let's switch over to broadcasting. And there's a big player in the broadcasting market called Tegna. And apparently, looks like a hedge fund wants to buy them out. But this, well, is not going to be an easy path, primarily because of your union. And I guess other unions are not too happy about this. We're seeing a lot of consolidation in the media. And the hedge funds, anytime Wall Street gets involved, I mean, this is a perfect example of how things get screwed up, because a lot of hedge funds run our rails today. And we know what's happening with our railroads today. Same thing happening with newspapers, shedding of jobs and broadcasting. Can you explain what's going on here? Because I guess the Federal Communications Commission is involved. John, I'll let you pick it up from there.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm sitting over here cracking my knuckles, right? Because I think it's really imperative for us to get engaged, to fight the hedge fund and the financialization of our employers and our essentially our society. Hedge funds are trying to gobble things up. And what they do is cash extraction, right? They're not about like trying to invest in a business and make it grow and try to enjoy, you know, make the business do more of what it's been doing. It's all about cash extraction. So we have a hedge fund. This hedge fund's name is Standard General. They own a ton of casinos, is probably what people might know them for, but they're a massive multi-billion-dollar hedge fund. They last year, early last year, announced that they wanted to buy Tegna, which owns 64 TV stations, local broadcast news TV stations all across the U.S. And we said, you know, we've had experience with hedge funds owning local news, and it's not gone really well. That happened at the Denver Post more than 12, 13 years ago. And we saw that the hedge fund came in and cut basically 80% of the jobs, 80% of the journalists, meaning that you have a huge reduction of local news. So here, the FCC basically is the regulator, the cop in town, to make sure that any takeovers of local broadcasters are done in the public interest under their localism mandate. And so we stuck our finger up and said, actually, not so fast. We do not think that hedge funds should own local media. We've known that hedge funds are really terrible owning local media and being stewards of local media. They aren't. So let's halt this. And just at the end of February, the FCC basically referred the whole matter to an administrative law judge, which tries to put it basically on ice. So we're just trying to kill this because we see hedge fund takeovers of local media as a job killer and a way to raise prices on consumers. So we're fighting it aggressively over there.
So right now this is in the hands of one person, an administrative law judge. When do we expect a ruling on this?
Well, you know, anyone who's dealt with lawyers and judges knows that there's all these different motions that file. So my latest understanding is that some point in the next couple of weeks, we expect to start doing what would be called a scheduling conference, hearing some initial motions. But we're looking at basically a runway of several months, which frankly, I am very okay with, because May 22nd is the date at which this deal dies on its own. So it's basically a dead deal, but this hedge funds, you know, they're greedy. They've got people who are just hungry for money and are sore losers. They're just sticking in it to continue to fight.
So it's a good thing the lawyers are getting involved in this one, because they could drag it out and kill the deal.
Hope-a-dope them. Yeah, that's the way that it's been going on both sides. That's just what's happening here. Work for me. I just want to save these jobs.
That's a brilliant strategy. No wonder you're still president. I love that. Well, you know what? The bigger picture here, I read a statistic that really took my breath away. Over the past 15 years, more than 1,800 local newspapers have shut down. And And John, a lot of this has to do with what we just talked about, these hedge funds. They gobble up the papers, they shed the staff, and as a result, the respective communities are not getting the coverage that they deserve. And it's really sad what's going on here. I was reading earlier about Gannett. Now, Gannett's a big player. They merged with a company called Gatehouse. This was back in 2019. And they were fighting, I believe, Alden. Was it Alden Capital? Aren't they the big player when it comes to newspaper consolidation?
Yeah, big Eagle hedge fund, yep.
Yeah. Well, apparently, they decided to merge with Gatehouse to fight Alden. Alden said, okay, we're not going to deal with this. But the bottom line is this. Before they merged with Gatehouse, they had almost 28,000 employees. And as of the end of 2022, they're down to 11,200. I mean, almost a third of where they were a couple of years ago. Is this just going to continue here? I mean, how do you fight a situation like this, John? I mean, this is horrible.
It really is. Well, you know, just related back to the fight we've got in broadcast, trying to fight hedge fund Standard General from taking over Tegna. One of the financial backers in that deal is a group called Apollo Global Management, which is a huge private equity fund. That same private equity fund, Apollo, back in 2019, gave a huge and with a massive interest rate, 11.5% interest rate loan over to Gatehouse and Gannett to merge. And that loan in particular has meant that the company has been just having to pay all of its money that comes in. So all of the subscriptions, all the advertising dollars, all of it has to be funneled in basically towards these ridiculous debt servicing payments. And then they cut journalists in the process. So this is just another situation with Gannett merging with Gatehouse, where you've got private equity and hedge funds financializing the news. And that means less coverage in our communities. And that means an erosion of our democracy, because no one is minding the store at city council or at the county judge's office. And so there's no reporter there watching to make sure that our tax dollars are hard at work.
And to be clear here, when it comes to private equity, we're not talking Wall Street. These are people that are not listed on any exchange, or like the New York Stock Exchange or NASDAQ. These are like billionaires that kind of pull their money together, create this fund, and the whole idea is to make more money for that fund. Is that a pretty good description of what's going on?
It is, yeah. So you won't see them necessarily listed on a Wall Street exchange, but they are probably also everywhere because they are, you know, potentially minority shareholders in a company, and then they will do things like hostile takeovers or bids to try and say, actually, you're paying your employees too much. We have this whole issue happening right now in tech, where you basically have large investment funds basically calling the heads of different tech companies and demanding that they follow suit and lay off people, just like Amazon's laying off people or Meta and Facebook are laying off people, because they want to increase and jack up the stock price. And if they don't see those cuts, they'll do it. These are people's jobs we're talking about. And these hedge funds and private equity groups are destroying it.
And it's very hard to fight that because they're private equity. They're not Wall Street listed. There's no like Securities and Exchange Commission. There's no stockholders or shareholders protests that can be involved. We just have to call attention to it, and hopefully the communities will speak up on it. And obviously, the same thing goes with your union, the News Guild. Boy, I tell you, you got a tough job here. But the bottom line is, you're organizing, and you're still growing your membership, so keep doing what you're doing. Anything you want to call attention to here before we button up the show?
You know, I think a big thing, you know, for our strike in Pittsburgh, folks can follow along the strike and support the strikers. We've got a really nice strike fund that just goes to cover people's mortgage, rent, cat food payments even, or, you know, helping fix any emergencies. But they can follow our strike publication at unionprogress.com. We call it the PUP. It's the Pittsburgh Union Progress, unionprogress.com.
Unionprogress.com. Do check that out. Help the strikers over there. Pittsburgh Post-Gazette going on for almost 6 months. Very sad and tragic, too, with what's going on the picket line. John, you take care. We'll talk down the road. Okay, brother?
All right. Thanks so much for having me.
Okay. National website, too. newsguild.org. That'll be it for another edition of America's Workforce. Tomorrow, we'll check in with the insulators and the Valley Report. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.